Support for this public radio podcast comes from Bose, offering Bose in-ear headphones designed for comfort and quality sound and featuring soft silicone tips in three sizes at bose.com/radio.
Let me tell you about this time in the very recent past when I got burned by my spending habits. And I do mean burned, literally. A hole in my arm that now, 2 months later, is still not healing quite right. And I've got a feeling for the rest of my life, I can look at that spot and think, did I really need that watch? I'm Jeff Horwich, and this is In the Loop. And here's the deal with my arm. Very suddenly one day, I got it into my head that I needed this watch that I read about in a magazine. You wear it while you sleep, see? And it keeps track all night long of your tossing and turning. Then, using some very special formula, I don't know how it works, it knows the perfect moment to vibrate on your arm and gently wake you up. You're supposed to wake up feeling more rested, in a better mood. A new model was just out. I bought it completely on impulse, aided and abetted by the internet. $180.
You paid how much?
$180. But here's the thing, right? The Magic Wake Up Watch had a problem. A problem that caused it to shoot a continuous stream of low voltage electricity into my wrist. 2 mornings in a row, I lifted the watch off my arm. I found a sore, bloody mess. On day 3, I got a frantic email from the company recalling every single watch they had sold of this model. Part of me was mad. That's the part of me that took digital photos so I was ready for the lawsuit when my hand falls off. The other part of me, though, thinks, you know what? I kind of had this coming. I'm an impulse spender. My weaknesses are electronics and musical instruments. Not to the point of financial peril, thank goodness, but I'm like many people. I know I shouldn't spend so much, and it eats at me. Kind of like that watch. Surveys of Americans show I'm in great company, as a matter of fact. 2/3 of us admit we don't save enough. Thanks to credit card debt, the proportion of our income we save, the so-called savings rate, has turned negative. That's only happened once before, back during the Great Depression. We splurge by eating out more than ever before. We're waiting in line for the latest iPod or a $5 cup of coffee. Lots of us classify things like cell phones and computers in surveys as needs rather than wants. Young adults have the most loose spending habits of all. I mean, let's face it. Sales are still going up at Brookstone. You know our spending culture is alive and well. But the economy is in kind of a weird spot. Home sales are at the lowest level in a decade. Falling real estate prices could put a $2 trillion smackdown on the U.S. economy in the next 2 years. Now, these rising house prices encouraged our spending habits. They made us feel richer than we were. Now that excuse is gone. And lots of us might wish we'd been saving just a little bit more. Sure, we need to slow down. But you know what? Those habits are tough to kill. And tonight's In the Loop is all about why. Why do we spend on all this stuff we don't need? And why are we spending so much? We've got our usual mix of stories, guests, and music to help us ponder this question. Our house band, The Smarts, is here to help, of course. And we've got our audience here at Minnesota Public Radio. We're going to get inside their heads on this question as well. Whether you're with us over the airwaves, our podcast, or here in person, thank you for spending an hour with us in the loop. Quick epilogue to the watch thing, just to be fair to the company. I did get my replacement the other day. So far, so good. All right, I am pushing a rickety old shopping cart out into the middle of the stage here, full of items that members of our audience brought to share with us. We asked people to come and share something that maybe they don't feel so hot about after the fact. Let's dip into our magic shopping cart of bad purchases. Okay, I don't know what this is. It's a long metal thing with a plastic kind of a rattly thing on the end. It says Scotch-Brite. Who brought this tonight? Oh, there we go. Yes. Tell me what the heck it is.
My name is Erin DeBoer Moran. I'm from St. Paul. It's a floor lint roller.
A floor lint roller.
Yeah, I know.
What lives in your house?
Cats. Well, we thought, because we have hardwood floors, we thought we only have, like, area rugs. Well, you know, like a floor lint roller, that's all you need. You don't need a vacuum. So we bought it, and we didn't use it. I actually ended up taking the roller off the end and getting on the floor and doing it by hand anyways, so.
It actually made your life more difficult.
Yeah, it did.
All right, there you are. Thank you very much. Thanks. And back down to our shopping cart. This feels like Price is Right here. Okay, now this says the deluxe backup. Who wants to tell me what this is that I'm holding?
Right here.
There we are, yes.
Stacy Crane from Woodbury. It's not a chair.
It's not a chair, it's a
N-A-D-A. Backup. It's not a chair.
Okay.
So you hook it, I guess. I've never used it, of course.
It looks like some sort of harness or something, as I see the woman in the front.
It supports your back so that if you were on a bench or on the floor and you prefer to have a backed chair,
sure.
You put part of it around your back and then your knees sort of support. That's a very delicate balancing act, apparently, with pulleys and levees, and I've just
As I can tell, everybody starts walking up to you and asking how your
hernia
is doing.
Yeah, I would be too embarrassed to wear that in public.
What were you thinking when you bought it?
It seemed like a good idea at the State Fair when I picked it up.
Uh-huh.
For a mere $65, I have a not a chair.
Mm. Wow. Well, here you go.
Thank you.
Thanks for bringing that in, and enjoy it. Let's keep going. This is fun. Okay. T-shirt. I'm holding up a T-shirt. White and black says, Jesus is my homeboy. On the front. Choose Jesus as your homeboy back there, sir?
Yeah.
What's your name? Where are you from?
My name's Eric Kennedy. I'm from St. Paul.
You know, if Jesus was my homeboy, I'd be a little more excited about it than you sounded just now.
Yeah, it was a total impulse. It was while it was really popular. I almost didn't bring it because I'm so embarrassed that I own it. I wore it once, and it's been in my drawer for the past, 2 years. And
how much was this?
I think $20.
Holy cow.
I know. Yeah. It's embarrassing. I feel like a real tool. So.
Well, just remember, as much of a tool as you may feel like, Jesus still is your homeboy.
Absolutely.
There's your shirt back. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Okay. This looks nice. We got a scarf, I'm guessing. Whose scarf?
I am Allison Lindberg from Minneapolis.
Looks like a nice scarf, Allison.
It is a nice scarf.
Why does it qualify?
I was working, and I was driving students to the Somali Mall, and I brought no money for a reason, because I didn't want to buy anything. But I saw these scarves and went to the nearest ATM and bought four.
You're deeply charmed by the scarf, I suppose.
I like it. I wear it. But, yeah, it was worth it.
Okay. But it was an impulse purchase.
It was very impulsive.
Sometimes it can be worth it.
Yep.
Thank you very much. Okay, this one I don't immediately get looking at it. I'm holding a diploma to Concordia University here in St. Paul. There we are. We've got a hand up in the back. Who are you? Where are you from?
My name is Katrina Johnston. I'm from St. Paul.
Okay, so you threw your diploma in our shopping cart of bad purchases.
I just checked today, and that diploma cost me upwards of $113,000.
Wow.
And I could have gone to public school and gotten just as good of an education for, maybe a fourth of that price. Nothing against Concordia. I loved it.
Oh, sure, right. Nothing against Concordia.
I mean, when I'm 90 years old, I'm still going to have no money because of it.
Right, you're in debt. Thanks to your education,
yes,
right?
Yes, it's true.
And does that change your spending habits going forward?
It does, because I have to pay back my loans and not have nice things.
Did you go to Concordia on impulse?
Kind of. It was the one school I applied to, so.
And now you're here to show them some love.
That's right.
Thank you very much. There's your diploma. Back to you. Let's keep going. Sure, round of applause for the good folks at Concordia. Okay, hand me this bottle of wine. So this is your wine, sir?
Yes, it is.
What's your name and where are you from?
Art Walsh from Forest Lake.
All right, so why wine? Why this particular bottle of wine?
Well, that's, a representative bottle. There are many more like it. Even the most unschooled wine drinker in your audience may notice, if you hold that up, that a good Chardonnay should not look like bourbon.
It's got kind of an orange thing going on there.
That
This was a $16 bottle of wine originally.
About 35 years ago, I got interested in wine, and I certainly don't apologize for that. To fast forward a bit, last year, I moved into a new small house in Forest Lake and found that there's hardly room for many other things in the house because I've got way too much wine.
You've got more wine than you'll ever drink, and a lot of wine that you wouldn't drink even if you had a chance.
Exactly.
Thanks for bringing this. Thank you to everybody who threw something into our magic shopping cart. You know, scientists and academics are getting more and more interested in exactly what makes us so loose with our money. Studies, of course, can be so boring. I hope you'll forgive us as we embark on a short survey of the latest research.
Survey of the latest
research.
Research.
Let's start with the very real battle going on between your ears. Earlier this year, researchers told us what happens when you ask people to go shopping inside an MRI machine.
This doesn't look like J. Crew.
Well, think of it like shopping from a catalog. On your back, in a big metal tube. You get $40 to spend, if you want. Then they show you pictures.
Ooh, Napoleon Dynamite DVD. Sweet.
That's a true example. And when they do this, a little chunk of your brain does a kind of a dance.
Oh, yeah, gimme.
It's the same chunk that lights up when people play video games or have sex.
Did they learn that inside an MRI machine?
It's very interesting to think about. Let's stay on track here. A few seconds after you see the picture of the product, they show you the price.
Oh, man.
And a very different chunk of your brain springs to life.
Ow, 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 ouch, ouch, ouch.
This time, it's the piece of brain that responds to pain and disgust.
Yeah.
Seems a little obvious, right? But actually, this really shakes up the way we think about economic choices. See, economists are used to thinking about spending as a rational calculation of costs and benefits.
But it's also a chemical, biological battle of emotions inside your brain.
Exactly.
DVD, you make me feel so good. I wanna take you home and check out your deleted scenes. Ow.
But think about the money. Oh God, think about the money.
Now, this raises some kind of interesting questions, like whether credit cards might be more than just convenient. What if they actually have a biological effect on our brains by dulling the pain we feel from spending?
Oh, God, think about the mo...
Visa, the emotional anesthetic.
Scientists looking for connections between spending and emotion have been exploring other avenues, too. In particular, they have fingered our noses. Our sense of smell offers a straight shot to our brain's limbic system, the center of emotion and memory. Now, tests a few years ago showed people were more than 5 times as likely to buy a pair of shoes when the room smelled just the tiniest bit like flowers.
I feel like some shoes.
Not only that, we'll actually pay more for shoes when you tease us with a little bit of flower power. Even people who say they hate that smell. Turns out lavender is another way to relax us, get us to let our guard down. Here's another one. Researchers have demonstrated we're more likely to buy a product when it appears to smile, talk to us, or otherwise act like a human. At last, we've got a scientific explanation for the Kool-Aid Man, Mayor McCheese, and that parquet margarine container.
Parquet.
Now, this research hasn't quite made it from the TV to store shelves just yet, but it can't be long, right?
Hey there, I'm a digital camera. You're looking good. I got 8 megapixels, baby. Auto flash. Hey, where you going? Hey, come back here, hey!
Which brings us to our final piece of research from earlier this year. Test subjects were given a blank sheet of paper and a very simple task.
Just write down whatever's on your mind. Oh, and whatever you do, Don't think about a white bear.
A white bear? Turns out, the struggle of trying to banish polar bears from your mind...
Go away! Go away! No.
It wears us down.
I'm not going to think about a white bear. I'm not thinking about a white bear.
Those test subjects had much less ability to control their impulses in a shopping experiment. Apparently, we have a limited reservoir of self-restraint. And if it's already tapped by the time you get in the door, you're like a sitting duck for spur-of-the-moment purchases.
Rough day at work. Kids driving you crazy. Tired of fighting the white bear who creeps into your daily thoughts? Just feeling generally beaten down by life? We're waiting for you at Target.
God help us if stores start actively targeting our reserves of self-restraint.
Welcome to Target. Try not to think too hard about bird flu, the Iraq War, and those ex-lovers who got away. And please check out the clearance sales in aisle 9.
Let's recap our research here. Don't shop tired or with weakened mental powers. Beware of shoe stores that smell like flowers. And remember this part. Every single purchase inside your brain is a delicate dance between pleasure and pain. That's our survey of the latest research.
Survey of the latest
research.
Thank you to our actors, Robin Johnson, Sandon Totten, and Mark Brule. Just a little bit of Larissa Anderson in there as well. Target had nothing to do with this. I'm Jeff Horwich, and you're listening to In the Loop. Let's bring the lights up here and go right back to our audience here at the UBS Forum here at Minnesota Public Radio. What kind of things sway you into spending? Anybody here know, have a sense of what your weaknesses are? Yeah, maybe just caught up in the moment. We got two here, so we'll get them both. Can you give me your name and where you're from?
Oh, Michelle Nolan from Minneapolis. I'm a big fan of shoes and eBay. Go to eBay, you find exactly what you're looking for. Then you can watch it in eBay, see what other people are bidding at, wait till the last minute, and then just like bid more than anybody else could possibly bid, and then you'll get the shoes.
What do you feel like when you're bidding?
Well, I'm mostly nervous because you see like eight people bidding on it, and they're kind of edging each other out, and you haven't bid yet, so nobody knows that you're in on the game, kind of. And then when you get, this is so silly, when you get down to the very end, it's like, okay, do you wait like 2 minutes before you make your bid, or will your computer freeze, or do you wait for like 30 seconds? And then if you bid too soon, someone else could bid, so it's kind of a game.
Okay, thanks, Michelle. Let's grab one more back there, and then we'll keep going.
I'm Tim Carroll from Minneapolis. There's another internet model that might be even worse. There are sites now that do liquidations of products that you might not otherwise find on sale, like at REI. I'm particularly a sucker for sporting goods. And these sites will sell small lots out with the idea that get it now, limited volume, and they have a little meter that shows the sale ticking off as people are buying it. So it's that impulse that, oh, if I don't buy it right now, that deal's gone forever, and I don't need a third Gore-Tex jacket. But if I don't buy it now, it's gone forever. So I ended up with a closet full of jackets that I don't need.
Thank you. Well, this is a great time to move on to one person that I want to hear from. Somebody who is all about getting us into the zone, you know, making us listen to that part of our brain that's telling us to spend.
The best thing that my dad taught me at a young age is to be knowledgeable, to create some trust from your buyers. So if I get up there with a very confident tone and a confident description of, all right, now it's time to sell the Winchester 94, it's a 30-30 lever action, scope on top, take a look. People kind of take a step back and say, oh, she knows what she's dealing with. My name is Kaya Kokish. I'm an auctioneer. Sometimes a woman's touch is certainly kind of different. And if you say, like, a Stephen's favorite 22 is cute, they are cute. If you like firearms and if you think anything's going to be cute, that particular firearm is cute. I think people that really consistently like auctions and are drawn to them are of competitive nature. You get two people that really want an item, and then it's really fun for us as auctioneers because then you can kind of play one off the other and say, well, you can't share it. oftentimes you'll get someone that's frustrated because they really came to buy the item and it's really gone higher than they want to spend. And that's part of my job as the auctioneer, to try to get the crowd to spend as much as they can or they will. And if that person is approaching their limit, oftentimes what goes through their mind, and you can almost see it on their face, is like, well, all right, one more time. This is how my bid calling sounds, and every auctioneer does it different. For instance, if I have a dining room table, I might ask, and on the dining room table it has 6 chairs, 2 leaves, take a look at that piece, and who is 5 to go 500, but to go 5 to go 2.5, to go 250. The chant is a way to draw buyers in and create a sense of urgency that makes them understand that, okay, this item is up for sale right now, so make your decision quickly and jump in and be part of the fun. You get all 6 chairs there, but to go 3, but to go 3 and a quarter, 3 and a quarter and a half, but to go 350, but to go 350, 350, but to go 350. Sold for $325. Thanks, John. What's your buyer number today?
That's Kaya Kokish from Palisade, Minnesota. Now, for an auctioneer, it's all about getting you caught up in the moment, and your priorities get adjusted, you might say. For many of us, spending is so dependent on where we are and how we're feeling at the time, we kind of lose track of the bigger picture. But it doesn't take something as direct as an auctioneer to play upon that, and that point struck me while I took a trip not too long ago. Just relax, you can let out a smile as you walk down the aisle and you take your seat. Loosen up, cause you know once you're there, you can shop from your chair, you can feel complete. And now because you're high in the sky beyond the laws of gravity, oh Sky Mall, save the best crap for me. They've got this big electronic pen you can use just to scan in your news and have it read to you. Well, there's this thing, and it lets any guy keep a wireless eye on his barbecue. And there's a mug equipped with a plug, hot coffee via USB. Oh, SkyMall, save the best crap for me. If you need a little pick-me-up, if you're feeling like a schlub, just order up a tiny little bottle of wine and join the other Mile High Club. There's a comb with a laser in there that'll regrow your hair thick as it ever was. Pretty soon, you'll be living the dream. You'll be cooking with steam like Richard Simmons does. You're going out of town, you let your guard down. It's amazing all the things you need. Oh, SkyMall, save the best crap for me. All on your own and right in your home, make donuts for your family, that's right. Oh, SkyMall, save the best crap for me. Thank you, everybody, for listening to In the Loop from Minnesota Public Radio. That's our house band, The Smarts, behind me there. You know, that catalog never looks quite the same once you're on the ground. You just feel different. You're flying, you're going places, maybe they deprive your brain of oxygen, I don't know what it is. Whatever the formula, you're more likely to think it actually makes sense to spend money on this stuff. You're primed and prepped for spending by the conditions around you. It's kind of an obscure example, maybe, of a concept economists call the wealth effect. You know, there are all kinds of things that make us feel richer, whether we actually are or not. You know, house prices going up is one big example, investments are another. Even if we don't actually cash in, we spend more because we feel like we're better off. That's the wealth effect, kind of in a nutshell. Our next perspective involves what happens to people when they're suddenly feeling very wealthy. Our In the Loop producer, Sandon Totten, recently met up with some folks who know quite a bit about coming into large amounts of cash.
Yeah, I did.
So where you been, Sandon?
Well, I just got back from Cloquet, Minnesota, and it's the home of the Fond du Lac Band of Ojibwe.
And how, in a way, does this wealth effect kind of play out in this case?
Well, the band runs a couple casinos, right? And for the last 13 years, they've been splitting up the dividends of the casino profits between the roughly 4,000 members of the tribe.
Yeah, so do the tribe members get a lot of money?
Well, the adults get about $400 a month, and that's a decent amount, right? It's not bad. Mm-hmm. But if you are under the age of 18, you don't get any of that money. It just gets stored in a bank until your 18th birthday. But then you get a check that could be up to $45,000.
45 grand for a 18-year-old.
45 grand all at once, yeah. Imagine being 18 and getting that kind of cash all at once. I stopped in at a class at the Fond du Lac Ojibwe school where teacher Jennifer Johnson is trying hard to get her students to realize what that kind of cash really means.
My example is this. Steph, how much did you pay for that water?
$1.
That's $6 a gallon if you were to do the ounces.
This is some expensive water.
That's Jennifer Johnson asking the questions. She's teaching her class about the value of a dollar. Take that dollar and times it by 45,000. That's the kind of money her students are about to get.
Well, it's a big chunk of money. They usually blow it.
Wait. Blow it?
Oh, sure. It's like your parents giving you an allowance. You just blow it because it's not really your money. You didn't have to work for it.
Jennifer says she's seen students go through that money in less than a month. Gone, just like that. Poof. No savings accounts, no college funds. Seems insane, right? I ask her class, how does that happen?
Is it there in your pocket? I don't know. It's fun to go shopping.
You pull out that cash right there. You're like, wow, man, I gotta go do something.
Something like buy a car or two cars or a trip to Jamaica. Jennifer says, in the worst cases, kids go crazy with this money and spend it all on booze and drugs until there's nothing left. Her current students plan to save, but it's hard, especially when you've got friends, cousins, even parents already asking for gifts.
They're scavengers.
They're laughing now, but it can be stressful. According to Jennifer, sharing is a big part of Ojibwe culture, even when it comes to money.
I don't want to be around my family or anybody when I turn 18. My sister's asking me if I'll buy her a car. Like, are you going to take me on vacation? Are you going to borrow me?
Still, every single one of them says it's worth the hassle. And really, who would disagree? I mean, 45 grand. With that kind of money, I could get a new stereo. Heck, I could get a whole new sound system. A flat screen TV, a new sofa, and oh yeah, definitely a PlayStation 3. And, well, you get the picture. With all that stuff to tempt you, who would save?
I'm Matt Hammett.
Well, this guy did.
I'm 20 years old.
When he got his share of the tribal money, he put it into a CD account.
For me personally, I just like having that security that there's money there.
His friends pressured him to spend it, but he held out.
Well, I'd have to say that I was definitely tempted to, but I'm probably going to want that money when I get done with college.
But Matt's situation is pretty unique. His mom is the accountant for the Ojibwe tribe. He's grown up surrounded by money and people who know how to manage it. That's not the case for everyone on the reservation. The average per capita income is under $15,000. Many families live paycheck to paycheck.
My mom, she's real good at spending.
Meet Chris Stiffarm. He turned 18 less than a month ago. He's taking me for a ride in his truck. It was one of his first purchases after he got his 45 grand.
So how long did it take you until suddenly you had nothing? I mean,
it took me probably 2 weeks. Then I was down to zero again. I ran into a lot of stuff I wanted to buy.
A lot of stuff for Chris means two trucks, three ATVs, a speedboat, a trailer, and, oh yeah, he got a PlayStation 3. Now, it's not fair to say Chris spent all his money. He did put aside $500.
Oh yeah, I put like $500 for my baby.
His girlfriend is expecting a child. He keeps his kid's future inheritance hidden in his bedroom.
Every day I throw like all my loose change and like my small dollars or something, I'll throw in there and save it.
Chris pulls up to the house where he lives. The yard is littered with vehicles.
This is one of my wheelers. This is a Raptor 660. And then this is a 500 Polaris Predator.
There's no doubt he's proud of his purchases. But I can't help wonder. His family isn't rich, and with a baby on the way, why would he spend all that money on cars and boats?
It's investment. My boat right now is worth $17,000, and that trailer ton's worth $5,000. So I could sell it and get money or a new car or something.
And unlike some of his friends who blew their whole windfall on drugs and parties, Chris has something to show for his money. These ATVs, the trucks, they're a way for him to see his wealth. And these things give Chris a sense of financial security, kind of like Matt and his CD account. These are the kinds of things Jennifer Johnson wants her students to be thinking about. She knows a lot of them might never see this kind of money again, but that doesn't mean they have to blow it.
you just need to discipline yourself on what those true wants really are. Some will learn it, some won't, and some you'll never know.
So, Sandin, I kind of sense we're arriving at a life lesson here. Is it just that, you know, a penny saved is a penny earned?
Well, it's actually not that simple. The lesson Jennifer Johnson wants her students to take away isn't that you have to save all your money. It's that if you are going to spend it, consider your options. Know what's important to you and make sure you make it count.
Well, thanks for the story. That's our producer, Sandin Totten. We all like to think if we had $45,000, we'd be very wise stewards of that money. If we had $100,000 or $1 million, maybe we could resist the temptation. Maybe. But let's face it, the half of Americans that are carrying around credit card debt tell a little bit different story. Tonight's episode is called Why Am I Spending So Much? And our next guest here has been working on that question in a way I think none of us would really envy. She wants to stay anonymous. We'll use your initials, AG. And we'll honor your anonymity for reasons that'll be clear as we move along. Anyway, thank you very much for coming in.
You're welcome.
Okay, so I'm just going to lay the facts out. 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, you were $50,000 in debt.
Yes.
Okay. Boil it down for me. How did that happen? How did you get to that point?
Like one of the guests in the audience, I went to a college that was very easy to get into. And because of that, I paid a lot more in tuition than I probably should have. So I landed myself about 2 years after enrolling in that school at $45,000 in debt. And I owed my parents $5,000 because I had credit card debt that I couldn't pay. And they had to bail me out. So $50,000 in debt.
So what happened with the credit card debt?
Well, let me just say about the student loan. There's a little thing called getting overage checks. It's where you apply for a student loan more than you need to pay your tuition, more than you need to pay for your books, and you go on trips to New York or Paris, and you buy a lot of handbags and sweaters and shoes. So my student loan debt wasn't entirely tuition related. It was related to how much I wanted to take out and that I was allowed to take out from my lenders.
What was the process that led you down that path? I mean, is it something just inherent in you? Or
yeah, I mean,
why do you spend so much?
I mean, who knows? Yeah. You know, I'm stumped. I think I lack something. I think there's something more I need. But I'm aching. There's a hole I want to fill up with stuff. I want a lot of stuff. And stuff brings an image. And when I get that image, then that's all everybody sees. And they don't have to see the thing I'm lacking.
What's the image that you wanted for yourself? You said there was some image you were trying to fulfill.
Yeah.
What is it? What does it look like?
I mean, it's you know, all ducks in a row. There's nothing to worry about here. I've got myself covered. How about you?
And spending, having stuff gives that sense, you think, that you've got everything together?
Mm-hmm.
When you find yourself $50,000 in debt, what's your mental state? I've never been there. I'm trying to imagine.
Right. I mean, that's gun to the head. I mean, automatically suicide. Automatically. What I do with my money, when I put myself in this position, leads me to a point where I don't want to be alive. My uncle jumped off the Hennepin Avenue Bridge because he was in debt. My grandparents had severe debt during the Depression, and it caused a lot of angst. And whether it be a learned behavior or a natural behavior to want to put a gun to your head, but fortunately, that's not what I did. I found another way.
How did you talk yourself back from that situation?
You know, other people talked me back. Because here I was, poor me, I'm a victim. And what can I do to get out of it? And I was offered some resources.
Okay, and we may be going into your in Debtors Anonymous now, which is a program obviously to help people who find themselves in serious debt. What are the tools, you know, what are the techniques that you picked up there or you developed for yourself that you use to manage your life now?
My primary concern for me is that I stop incurring unsecured debt. My car note is secured by my car. My mortgage is secured by my house. Credit card debt is not secured by anything, and that is the type of debt I have to stop. Tuition loans, that's the kind of debt I have to stop. There's nothing that can be secured about it.
So what do you do day-to-day living? How do you keep yourself from falling into more unsecured debt?
Yeah, you know, quite honestly, I don't sometimes. Sometimes I don't control it. Sometimes I just go and buy this and that and this and that. But another way I manage it, and this seems to really work for me, I have a spending and earning plan. I know exactly how much every month I'm earning. I know exactly how much every month I need to spend for groceries, for gas, for insurance, and so forth. I have envelopes. I keep cash in those. And when the cash is gone...
Now, you're recently engaged to be married, right?
Yes.
So I think a lot of people can relate to money conversations that they have with their spouse. It's not always an easy thing. How does that work in your relationship?
I haven't figured that out yet. I don't know.
Do you have a very different perspective than your fiancé on money? Do you feel like you have a stronger impulse to buy than he does?
Yeah, you know, I think so, and... you know, I want the best things in life, and he's happy with the things that he needs. So there's a battle there.
Are you learning to think that way, or do you think this is just there's just going to have to be a compromise?
Well, no, because I, you know, again, to the image, to the I want to appear as if I have it all together. I have everything everybody else wants, and he really balances me because he buys the things that he needs. As I continue to move forward in this relationship and in my process of recovering from being in debt and working not to be in debt any longer and to actually have a savings and 401k and mutual funds.
And you have recovered pretty substantially, right?
Mm-hmm.
How do things look for you right now?
Well, I am no longer in credit card debt, nor do I owe my parents any money. So there's $5,000 down that I've paid. I have substantially paid down my tuition. In fact, I'm down to about $25,000 in student loan debt. And you know what? They'll get their money. And I actually just bought a house, and I've got a car that's ready to be paid off. And I actually, things are really balanced and very clear for me.
Well, AG, thank you very much for coming on and talking about your situation.
You're welcome.
Let's go back out to our audience here at the in the UBS Forum here at Minnesota Public Radio. I wonder about this lack that she was mentioning. There's a lack of something. Now, we maybe don't all feel it to that same degree or indulge it to that same degree, but can anybody identify with that? Yeah. Right back here.
Hi, I'm Josh from St. Paul. In college, I was living with a bunch of roommates in a house. We were all going to different universities at the time, and three of the roommates all had very fast cars, and I was, of course, carless, riding the bus to school every day. Well, I ended up joining the Navy in an officer program, and they, you know, give you a large chunk of money that you aren't told how to spend responsibly. So I, of course, went and bought a sports car and spent way too much money on modifications and extra pieces and gadgets and parts to make it go faster, and this was completely wasted money. We were able to drive around quickly, but all that resulted in was more speeding tickets and not really a whole lot of satisfaction.
Was that youthful indiscretion, or do you think it's always with you?
It was a bit of youthful indiscretion, but also I was the youngest member of the group. Most of the other guys were 3 or 4 years older than I was, and in my eyes, you know, much cooler than I was. So it was a way for me to fit in and have, you know, one of the faster cars and be part of the fun group of guys.
Well, this is a chance to go to an example that's kind of an interesting spin on this, very modern. Many of us can't identify with it directly, but maybe this is... the future of spending, especially as it relates to identity. This is Michelle. Hi, Michelle. Thanks for coming.
Hello.
Michelle Clark.
Yes.
We talked to Michelle as we were preparing the show and asked if she'd want to come and join us in the audience because, Michelle, you're very active in Second Life.
Second Life, yes.
Second Life is a virtual world where people have another version of yourself, something called your avatar.
Correct.
Right? And it's all about relating to people. I mean, it's social networking with people who you can't see face to face.
That's how I do it.
Well, tell me about how this idea of identity and spending for identity, how does it factor into Second
Life?
Well,
the first thing you do when you start Second Life is you build yourself. You make who you're going to be. They have a handful of templates you can choose from. And then you modify it to your own version of yourself in your ultra cool. And then you go out and you spend lindens.
Lindens are the currency of Second
Life. The currency. They actually have their own exchange rate.
Tell me about where your lindens have gone.
Clothing, additions to my physical properties,
Like what?
Enhancements to my avatar.
Tell me more.
I can make my avatar dance by clicking a button. Uh-huh. I can make my avatar do all kinds of different things. My avatar can have sex.
All right.
And I can do this by spending lindens, clicking on a button, interacting.
Now, let's not beat around the point here. You have a... you have a very attractive avatar, don't you?
Yes, I do. She has a female, feminine swish to her walk. I can dance in different ways.
That's how you earn money in Second Life, right?
Yes, let's I'm an exotic honest. Dancer.
Mm-hmm. And just give me a moment to think. Genuinely, I need a moment to think. What happens if you're not spending money on your identity in one way or another in Second Life?
Oh, you can be spotted right away.
And I can say from experience, nobody will talk to you.
Yes.
Because I've been there. I went into Second Life one day when I was homesick, thought I'd try it out, and I felt ostracized. Even though I gave myself blue skin and all this stuff, I was okay, visible now, a mile away as a...
But you see, you weren't in the right place to be someplace where somebody has blue skin.
Oh. Thank you, Michelle. Mm-hmm. That's Michelle Clark. Absolutely. Now that's it's a sort of a highly metaphorical example, except for the fact that it also is true. You know, we spend to be the person who we want to be, to look like the person that we want to look like. You would think if somebody didn't have much money, let's say homeless teenagers, that they'd be very limited to spending on exactly what they need. And a lot of us might be inclined to think that's entirely appropriate. You know, don't be extravagant. We talked to somebody named Sarah Olson, who works with homeless young people here in the Twin Cities, and she says it's a little bit more complicated than that.
I see people oftentimes spending money on what other people are going to see, like name brand shoes for their baby or name brand clothes for themselves, more so than on something they might actually need. I've had to check myself a lot in this work because when a young person comes to me and says, no, I need to have these name brand clothes, I'm thinking, no, what you need is an apartment. And somehow I've decided that I get to determine what they need. And I think we do that all the time. It's totally unfair. I spend money all the time on things I don't really need. And nobody is criticizing me for that. I don't know what that person's situation is. So I don't know, maybe they need a new shirt to feel good or to have people around them respect them more than they need an apartment right now.
Now, when I hear that, it makes me think, you know, spending can be a fairly legitimate way, you know, in measured doses of expressing who you are. One more question I want to throw out there before we move on with the show. When we overspend, when we spend more than we need to, who's to blame for that? Is it entirely within ourselves? Yeah, right here in back.
I'm Denise Velez from Puerto Rico. I completely blame the media.
That's okay.
I think I catch myself blaming TV for everything lately. If we weren't watching what we're watching, if we were listening to what we're listening and looking at the things that we're looking at, how else do you realize or make yourself think that you need these things? Because you don't. You are told what you need. You are told what to buy and what to wear and what looks good and what doesn't look good.
Thank you. Let's grab one more back here quickly, and then we'll move on. Yes, your name and where are you from?
Andrea from Bloomington. I think it's really easy to blame other people and blame the media, but I really think it comes within, because you can spend money, but it's not going to make you happy. So,
thanks, Andrea. I got to think about a big example from the past year, the iPhone, maybe Apple in general. I know a lot of people love Apple. Kind of drives me crazy, but you know, you got to hand it to them. There's such a consumer frenzy over the products that they put out, iPhones, iPods, the computers. They're really just, you know, slicker and more expensive versions of things that most of the people buying them already have. Cell phones, MP3 players, you name it. I mean, I can totally understand that impulse. But the company is lionized for its ability to get us to spend money. Now, our band here, The Smarts, has been thinking a little bit about the consumer merry-go-round that a lot of us get so easily pulled onto. Let's hear what they have to say. You're listening to In the Loop.
Say, did you hear? The new gotta have it is here. For only the third time this year. And though I am always the first in line, I believe maybe I'll sit this one out and see what the fuss is about. I'm sorry, but this time I'll take a pass. I'm out of gas. I look around, mansions overflowing with stuff. It still never seems quite enough. As soon as I've got it, then my house is what used to fill me with pride, but now I feel empty inside. I'm thinking of tossing away this junk, live like a monk. Say, did you hear? The new gotta have it's not here, but me, I'm not shedding a tear. The piece of my soul that has been for rent, the payment sent. I'm spent, spent, I'm spent, I'm spent.
That's the Smarts. Jimmy Kennedy on keyboards and taking vocal duties tonight. Joe Weissman on bass. Morris Engel on drums. You're listening to In the Loop on Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Jeff Horwich. This question of spending is timeless, really. I think this will always be with us. People have always, as long as they've had stones and pebbles to spend, been thinking about spending too much of it. But it also takes on a very different sense of urgency depending on what is going on in the economy. And as we taped this show, early November 2007, it's not exactly clear what is going on in the economy right now or how much we should care about that. So I've got Ed Lauterman here who's going to help provide a little bit of context for our conversation about spending. Ed, thanks very much for coming.
Great to be here.
I had a chance to interview Ed a couple of times while I was a business reporter here at Minnesota Public Radio, and I always enjoyed talking to him. He's got a long and varied career in economics. Ed, am I the only one who is looking at the headlines and feeling confused about are we healthy? Are we in trouble? What's going on?
I think there's a reason for people to be concerned. But it's one of those things where you can look at, you know, is the glass half full, is the glass half empty? If you look at sort of the indicators that they measure, gross domestic product, you know, output and how many people are unemployed and things like that, right now the economy is doing okay sort of by historic standards. But if you look at some of the other factors besides those sort of, you know, those common measures, then there's lots of problems.
Well, at the very least, you could say times are highly uncertain. We see that term, uncertainty, in the news a lot.
Yeah, and you see these, you know, the stock markets are still high, and they were very scared in August, and then the Federal Reserve met 6 weeks ago, and they cut this interest rate, and then the Dow Jones Industrial Average hit a new record, you know, and now it fell 362 points today. There's just extreme nervousness. But nobody wants to be the, at least nobody publicly wants to say, I'm getting out of this, I'm a little scared, and it's time to pull back. And everybody wants to, you know, and sort of in the financial world, in the capital world, wants to be there, you know, until the very end. No one wants to leave the party early. Even if you know that, you know, the party's going to get raided, or somebody's going to throw a stink bomb in, or, you know, something bad's going to happen, still nobody seems to want to leave the party early.
Now, that sort of applies with average folks, you might say. I mean, you would think in the midst of uncertainty, people might be inclined to kind of play it safe, cut back on their spending.
Oh, they are. It's not showing up in the statistics yet, but I think they really are. And, you know, there are a couple of surveys of consumer confidence that people have done for years. There's one at the University of Michigan, and there's one done by the Conference Board. Both of those have been falling now since last spring. Everybody is more pessimistic about the future than about now. And the degree of pessimism about the future has been getting worse from month to month.
Does that mean that they actually change their habits in some significant way?
Not necessarily, but over the whole population, yes. As people become more fearful about the economy, less certain about their jobs, they do cut back on spending. And I think you're going to see it in the in the Christmas spending season, that people aren't going to be spending as liberally as they would have.
The show tonight is about personal choices. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody individually chooses whether they're going to spend or save and how much of each they're going to do. Should people be paying attention, reacting to the economic news that they see?
Yes, but it's very hard to do. You know, for my parents' generation, if you went through the Great Depression or something, then the reality of being poor, the reality of being evicted, the reality of losing a farm to foreclosure or something, you know, that really just shaped the way they live their lives. And our generation, or my generation and your generation, you know, we've never really been crimped that way. And if everybody else is spending, if everybody else has designer clothes, if everybody else is driving a new RAV4. My wife and I just bought a RAV4. You know,
congratulations.
The motivation you get or the feeling you get from what all your peers are doing is very powerful. It's very hard to not be part of that whole social pattern.
You're an economist. I would presume you get everything under control, right? What should I see, Ed?
She spends on designer clothes, asks me how many lathes and milling machines I own and how many I'm actually ever making anything of metal.
Ah, that's your weakness. Tools.
Tools.
Well, how much truth is there to this notion that we've heard, especially since September 11th, that spending is vital to a healthy economy? Spending is a duty. You know, we were told, go out and spend. This is your sacrifice, I guess, was how that was, in a way, kind of portrayed. Is that true, that by spending, you know, we're the reason the economy stays good? And if we stop spending, look out.
There's nothing in economic theory or in economics that says that really has to be true. People have thought since the 1930s with John Maynard Keynes that if you have an economy that's sort of stuck in a rut, that increasing consumer spending is a way to get out of it. But the idea that you sort of have to permanently encourage more and more and more consumption to have a healthy economy, it's sort of a fun fantasy to have, but it's not necessarily something that's grounded in economics. Mm. There are imbalances that can't go on forever, and sort of one of the first laws of economics is that if something can't go on forever, it won't. We're on trends that can't be sustained over the long run, but how exactly they're going to stop, nobody really knows.
Ed Lauterman, thank you very much for coming on In the Loop and giving us some perspective. You know, all night we've been asking the question, why do we spend? And of course, there's no one easy answer to that. If there were, we'd all have ourselves trained pretty well by now how to behave. I know I haven't accomplished that yet. We've hit on biological explanations, economic theories, this tremendous marketing machine that's out there. We've also kind of been dancing around one big reality, I think, and I want to put a fine point on it before we wrap up. Shopping, spending, self-indulgence. Of course, these are all parts of being an American.
I'm Zainab Hassan.
Zainab Hassan definitely did not grow up with our American spending psyche.
I originally came from Somalia, mainly for higher education. I was about 17 years old.
And to Zainab, our shopping culture was...
It was sort of like... Wow.
American consumerism brought a shock for her around every corner. You could go, for example, inside this thing called a mall, and you could spend all day there.
Then you have like 10, 15 different brand names for the same product who do the same job. And to me, I was like, what is this? In Somalia, if you don't have cash, you don't buy anything because there is nothing called credit card. So you just buy when you have the money and you buy what you need.
More than anything, Zainab was struck by our attitude.
Some people just go to shopping to make them feel better that they went to shopping. It's completely a different frame of mind and different culture, if I may say.
Yes, you may, even though it hurts us to hear it a little bit. But Zainab is not here to shame us.
I guess I kind of adopted the culture of going to shopping and buying things. Sometimes I open my closets and I'm sort of like, wow, you know, why do I need this? Maybe I will never buy shoes again. And then I end up buying them. Probably if people who just came from Somalia came to my house would think that something is wrong with me.
Clothing and shoes are her vices, and it's always hard, she says, to pass up a sale. But over 20 years in the U.S., Zainab has come to terms with her American shopping identity. And hearing it from her, it's a good reminder of the balance that we all can try to strike.
As long as you help others who are in need, I think you also deserve to feel good and to look good. Because ultimately, I mean, we do work hard. Sometimes I work like 12, 14 hours a day. And I think I do deserve at least to have the opportunity to buy something that makes me feel good.
Zainab can be at peace with spending because she regards it as both a right to spend her money that she earns how she wants and a privilege. Now, we don't all have the perspective of a childhood in Somalia, but we can try to realize what a rare gift it really is to live in a place where we can even talk about what is a healthy level of self-indulgence. That should make it a little easier to resist the mantra. The mantra from government that spending itself is patriotic, that our overconsumption is the bedrock of a healthy economy. The mantra from Visa and MasterCard that the world actually becomes a happier place every time you use your credit card. The mantra that spending isn't just a part of who we are, of course it is, but that it is who we are. The credit card companies have demonstrated time and again just how powerful it is. Powerful enough to make you break into song. When you're spending, the whole world spends with you. When you're charging, that's right, the sun comes shining through. But when you're saving, you bring on the rain, so stop your scrimping, be happy again. Keep on spending, 'cause when you're spending, the whole world spends.
The whole world spends.
That's right, the whole world spends with you. All right, that's In the Loop for this evening. That's our house band, The Smarts, backing me up. Learn more about them at thesmartsband.com, including their recent album In Tribute To. You can join the network of listeners, our public insight network, we call it, who help us build the show. Subscribe to our podcast. You can check out the Loophole blog. Get tickets to future tapings. All that stuff at minnesotapublicradio.org/InTheLoop. In the Loop is produced by Julie Seipel, Sandon Totten, and Larissa Anderson. Our interns are Bradley Campbell and Anton Fryant. Thanks to Molly Bloom, Melody Yang, Andrew Haig, and Preston Wright from Public Insight Journalism. We get multimedia help from Christina Schmidt and photographer Jeremy Pavlik. Our technical director is Josh Kubasta, with engineer Maury Jensen and live producers Alan Freckman and Nancy Hakomaki. Jim Gates is our editor. Our senior producer is Mark Brule. Production of In the Loop is supervised by Leith Bishop. Our executive producer is Michael Scholar. Thanks to all of our guests tonight. Thanks, of course, to another amazing audience here at Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Jeff Horwich. We'll see you next time in the Loop. Hi there, this is Jeff again with a couple quick announcements. First, if you enjoyed the show, we'd love for you to come down to Minnesota Public Radio in St. Paul and join our studio audience. We're taping new episodes almost every Thursday night until the middle of December. Tickets are totally free, and we'll provide food and Summit beer before the show. Our next one, November 8th, is called Bullying for Grown-Ups. From the office to the military to family life, let's face it, bullying, it's not just for kids. We'll look at where it shows up and the role it plays in adult life. Reserve your seats at minnesotapublicradio.org/InTheLoop. While you're there, you can check out videos and slideshows from recent episodes, and you can chime in on other topics we've got in the works. Check us out online, and we'll see you next week.